platform.
Live from Crestview Studios, Florida, it's the Dave and Duke Call-In Show. And now here's your co-host, Speak Free Radio owner David Gahari and the incomparable Dr. David Duke. Limber up your dialing fingers.
Hey folks, it's Dave Gahari. You're listening to the Dave and Duke Call-In Show on speakfreeradio.com. And it is 6:02 p.m. Central Time, June 9. Yesterday, of course, was the observance, the 57th observance of the USS Liberty Massacre. Hold on a second. Dave is calling me. Be right with you, folks. Okay, I'm back. So Dave just had a little issue with getting in. So as I was saying, yesterday was the 57th observance of the USS Liberty Massacre, where Israel mercilessly murdered 34 American sailors, Marines, and one civilian, sailors including enlisted and officers, and injured really the rest of the crew, because even though only 174 had applied for recognition of their physical wounds, all of the crew were wounded mentally, obviously. So if you're attacked like the way that they were attacked, and if war crimes were committed the way that they were, then it is obviously a psychological burden for the rest of your life. And I know that for sure, because I have hung out with over the course of 15 years. Yeah, the past, well, no, not quite 15 years, but more than 10 years, USS Liberty survivors. And I know it because I've seen them up close and personal, and a lot of them are still grievously harmed by what the Jews did to them. So it was great yesterday, because there's so many more people coming into that space about the Liberty, and many more folks are opening their eyes and being made aware of the threat posed to all of us by, as Dave says, Jewish supremacism. And it's really a great awakening, and which is terrific. And that's why we're doing this show, because, and I talked about Dave actually yesterday in some of the interviews, because someone had asked me about when did I wake up. And I said, well, I was late to the game, like most of us are. I said, unlike David Duke, who has realized the threat presented by this miserable, malignant minority since he was 14. So that is 60 years ago, because he's going to be 74 in July next month. So about 3 weeks away, I think. So welcome, and we will get right into the calls after Dave and I have a quick chit-chat, because right now it's 6:06 Central Time. and we already got people lined up. And the template of the show is that anyone from around the world can call in and ask us, ask Dave, not us. I'm not here to take calls, but ask Dave any question or make any comment, obviously within reason. And Dave will have 2 minutes to answer that question or make a comment. And then about 15 seconds before that 2 minutes, you'll hear the sound. And then on the 2 minutes, you'll hear it again. And it's not supposed to keep repeating. It was on a loop. And then if he doesn't stop, then you'll hear this.
Open your mouth, lady.
Whoa.
Those of you who have been here a while know what that is. So that is how the show goes. And we take calls the whole 2 hours. And as I said, we're on speakfreeradio.com, which has a bunch of great new shows and a bunch of great new hosts. And so check that out, 24/7 programming. And got a great letter from a supporter who said, thank you very much for what you and all the others on your Speak Free Radio have done for me, my family, and all of my German people worldwide. And I replied and I said, we'll always champion the beautiful German people, and we will. So people love the programming here. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening. Please call in. And, of course, our ongoing challenge has been, if anyone can let us know of a more significant existential threat to humanity and world peace other than organized international Jewry, let us know. And we will quit. And alongside that, if anyone knows of a more effective deliverer of that message other than Dr. David Duke, let us know, and we'll quit. It's easy. Just give us those things. It should be easy. Look, it's a big world, right? So a larger existential threat to the world than Jews. Just let us know, because honestly, Sunday, we don't want to be here on Sunday nights, right? We're trying to get out of here, right?
Yeah, I think there's things we could do, but I do love to get on the program, and I do love to teach and educate people about this issue. It's the most important
and they love
issue
you.
In the world. And we look like we're getting closer and closer to a nuclear war right now. I mean, it's the most dangerous
yes.
possibility for nuclear war since the Cuban Missile Crisis, and maybe it's far more dangerous than that time, frankly. But there we came very close to nuclear war.
Oh, absolutely. Much closer now.
That's the end of everything.
Yep.
Like nothing else is important if we have a nuclear war right now.
That's what happens when Jews are in control.
That is what happens, because there are people that it's just shocking to understand the record, you know. I'm working on some social media posts, and I'm trying to do a site that takes posts and so forth. That's longer posts, and I'm going to start getting things down into a very good site. And I just told people I'm writing this today, and I wrote, I said, hold on to your seats. After you read my words, they may lead you, and maybe that's true for some of the new listeners to the show today, may lead you to roast, you know, some of your sacred cows, right? Sacred cows that can be uncomfortable to you until the truth liberates you and ultimately empowers you. And, you know, I connect, and you too, Dave, you connect the dots with your work and your publishing of the identity of the establishment elite who rule over us. And I show, I will show you today, and Dave will do it every day, and then my books will show you why they're so fearful of our free speech, of people that reveal them. because they know, and by the way, they're also fearful of the right people have to hear it. You know, people often talk about freedom of speech being the critical freedom. Well, it's even more important to have a right to hear a different point of view. It's one thing to speak, but it's also a right to hear the point of view. And I think that once people listen to our programming and read the books that you publish, they'll realize why we're some of the most censored people on earth. You know, Voltaire is often credited with the saying, you know, find out who rules over you, just find out who you can't criticize. Well, he may not have said that, but, you know, it's obviously true, that statement. And historically, societal establishments have always been ruled by the rich, powerful elite. But in earlier times, the elite were more often, or most often, the same people who ruled, they ruled over. Whatever the selfish motivations of rulers, most of them still were inherently of the same traditions, culture, loyalties, values, faiths, religious principles, and identity of the people over whom they ruled. And we have a situation today where the people who are ruling over us are enemies of the people of our nations, not just America, but all of Europe. We've got America and Europe fighting a war against Russia, which is damaging our economy, which is killing hundreds of thousands of young men in Ukraine, a lot of Russians too along the way. That's damaged and completely destroyed the economy of Europe, including Germany. And it may lead us to a nuclear war. So maybe in the next few minutes of this program, I will dare, in fact, I will dare, to name and prove the ethnic, you know, motivated and supremacist organizations and ideology that really rule over us. I'll show those listeners who want to hear it and who would like to know the truth, take the red pill. I will show, you know, this group, which has so much incredible media, economic, and political power and influence, and that few will dare out, what will dare to point out the identity of the elite who rules us. Why? It's like the proverbial gorilla in the room, right, Dave? It's the people.
The 6 million pound elephant in the room.
Well, that's right. But you know what it's like? You got a wild, powerful gorilla in the room. You sure don't dare offend it. You don't pull its tail, you know. what people do is they don't offend it. They don't dare offend it. And they pretend he's not in the room. Jewish power is so obvious. It's so obsequious. I mean, it's the proof of their power is the fact that it's the one power no one dares to complicitly name. I mean, they're always talking about the military-industrial complex. Well, I looked at the biggest contributors to Biden in the last election, the biggest 10 contributors. There were Jews. 9 out of 10 were Jews, by the way. None of them were weapons manufacturers, even though that's often said. None of them were oil company executives. None of them. They were all Jewish, mainly hedge fund operators and Wall Street operators and bankers and media, you know, big guys. That's who they were. And that's who controls politics. 18 of the 20 biggest to Clinton. I mean, the truth is that, and you know, one of the proofs of this, and we have something going on right now, and this will be the last subject I'll talk about before we take the calls. But I mean, we have something going on like right now in Gaza that's genocide right in our faces. We just have this massive killing of, 275 Palestinians, supposedly to free four Jewish, kidnapped Jewish hostages. And just talking about that and the fact that that's what every headline is in the country. Oh, the four, they're really worried about these four Jews who were kidnapped. I don't want to see anybody kidnapped. I don't want to see anybody hurt. But the fact is, in October 7, far fewer Jewish children and Jewish women and Jewish civilians were hurt. Then in the last two raids before October 7, and earlier called Operation Cast Lead and Protective Edge, which killed about 5,000 Palestinians. And at least of that, about 2,000 were children. Actually, yes, 70% were women and children. I looked at the casualty figures that Haaretz puts picture of in its newspaper, one of the oldest daily in Israel, and they show the pictures, and I went through them. And it was overwhelmingly military people, police officials, even, and the women that were killed there were overwhelmingly, they had on uniforms. They were serving at the bases that were overwhelmed by the Palestinians. And the total Jewish death toll for children on October 7 was a grand total of 36. Well, now we're passing 16,000 children murdered. And another 30,000 maimed. I'm talking about kids with their arms blown off, their legs blown off, their eyesight gone. They're crippled. They're damaged. Their brains are damaged. I mean, this is a mass genocide. But all we hear, and then we hear about the four is really, you know, kidnapped. Well, Israel has kidnapped 5,000 Palestinians, both in Gaza, just civilians, and in the West Bank under their autocratic and tyrannical control. And they put them in Israeli prisons where they're routinely tortured. Now, when I say they're tortured, it's not just something that I'm making up as some sort of anti-Semite or something like that. I can quote to you an article from the New York Times by one of their writers named Joel Greenberg. And it's all about how this was during the last, the second Antifada, I guess it's called. And he just calmly discussed. He wasn't condemning it. He wasn't saying this has got to stop. He wasn't condemning it at all. But he just casually remarked that in the last 5 years, that according to human rights records, International Red Cross, all these other organizations for human rights, independent ones, United Nations, that 30,000 Palestinians were tortured, including children, by the way, in the Israeli prisons. 30,000. And then,
Dave, we got a minute to go. I know, Dave, a minute.
It took 5,000 more people. And when they're talking about 120 Israeli hostages every day, they don't talk. This is what happens when you have a Jewish media and Jewish internet and Jewish broadcast media and Jewish news media and all the rest of it controlling the mind of the world. And that's what they do. 90% of the search engines are controlled by Google. Wikipedia is controlled by Google, the encyclopedia of the world. I mean, almost all the major networks are Jewish controlled. This is what happens. You have no real understanding of any of this stuff. Even the people that oppose Israel, you know, they get the narrative that they hear from the Jews all the time. So they're going to talk about the hostages.
One of
the hostages.
Dave, we got to get to the calls. They're piling up.
Okay, we'll get to the calls.
Okay, but, all right.
Anyway, that's a pretty good way to start.
Yes, absolutely. It's a great way to do it. And like I said, I don't know if you heard it, if you were in here, but I did a bunch of Liberty interviews this weekend.
Well, you somebody should. Why don't you make a couple of comments about Liberty.
Well, I did already. I did already. But somebody asked me, you know, when I woke up, I said I was really late to the game. I said there aren't very many people out there like David Duke who woke up at 14. You know, most of us take a long time to wake up. So, yeah, it's always good for that. Let's bring in Always Honest.
I remember when this happened. I remember it completely. I was in my car. And so I was 17, and I remember when they attacked, that American ship was attacked, and they were blaming the Egyptians. That's what the first news report, kind of like the 50,
right,
whatever, 40 Israeli babies that were beheaded by, you know, Hamas, even though there wasn't one beheaded by Hamas. I mean, it's the same kind of thing. That made a big impression. Then later, it was a mistake, and it died. And they had such a good investigation of it. You know, I don't know if you mentioned this on any of your programs you did, but we can start with this maybe, and people might want to ask some questions about this. But one of the interesting things is that the Liberty had a sister ship. Remember that? You know, the sister ship of the Liberty, right? It's identical to the Liberty, and it served in the China Sea, and it served off the coast of Korea and so forth, right? And that ship, it was exactly identical to the Liberty. It was an intelligence ship.
You're talking about the Pueblo.
Yes.
Yeah. And so Dave, you know me. I'm a USS Liberty prick, so right. I'll have to correct you.
I'm talking about the Pueblo. I said the Liberty.
I know, but I have to correct you before you go on.
Well, you didn't correct me because
I'm not done. All right. The Pueblo, it was not the same as the Liberty. It was a much smaller class.
It was very
ship.
Similar. It was an intelligence ship, though, Smile.
Yeah. It was a seaborne listening glamour, but there were five were like
when
the
I say identical,
just so
it was
you
an
know.
Intelligence ship.
Yeah.
It may have been smaller than the Liberty.
It was smaller and less.
But here's
much
the
smaller.
Situation. Yeah. The point I was trying to make, which thank you for clarifying that. That's good. That's a good clarification because it makes my point even better in the sense
good.
That. It was smaller than the Liberty, and it only had one casualty, basically, I think, if I remember correctly.
That's correct.
And this was investigated for a year.
They were held hostage for 11 months.
Yeah, but the investigation and all the big...
Oh, sure.
You know, hardly anybody was killed. A year.
Liberty was 8 days, 8-day investigation.
But, and then they just dismissed it, even though our chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, he... literally said, there's no doubt about it, Israel knowingly attacked the ship. They knew it was an American ship. It was not a mistake.
Thomas Moore. Thank you, Dave. Let's get to Always Honest.
Okay. Let's do it.
Hi, Dave and Dr. Duke. How are you?
Great.
Fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. So I'm going to bring us into the current, the present. And great. My concern is in what's happening in Palestine. As of yesterday, the news of the Nazarite camp being attacked by a Trojan horse, which is what they used the pier for. They took a humanitarian aid truck, loaded it with American soldiers and Israeli soldiers, and went into the camp where everybody is sheltering in Rafah on the beach, where all the tents are, to pull out four Israeli hostages. They lost a military Israeli commander and more soldiers than the four people they took out.
They did mention that on my radio news today that I heard.
They killed 274 civilians, mostly women and children, and another, I think, 600 injured or something like that. So as we're watching these events...
And all we're concerned about is four Israeli hostages. We're not concerned about the 9,000 Palestinians are being tortured in their prisons, and even Save the Children say that 40% of the children, minimum, are being molested and sexually attacked by these fiends.
They're sodomizing men with hot metal rods.
Yeah, they did. In fact,
finish your. You were saying something.
I'm leading into something.
Well, you said something that. So before people just forget what you said, because it's very important, there was a good report on CNN. Believe it or not, CNN, one of the reporters discussed this, that one of these people, it was reported by these victims, and by the way, whistleblowers, Jewish whistleblowers blew the whistle. At least there's some good Jews who understand horrors when they see them, that they have to speak out for the whole safety of their whole soul. But they talked about the fact that one of the Palestinians was sodomized with an electric prod, like a cattle prod, up his rectum.
Mm-hmm.
And it killed him. It literally killed him.
They electrocuted him.
It killed him.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the stuff that's going on. Now, if it had been a Jew or a Jewish woman that would have been done, let's say you would put a cattle prod, literally cow part of a woman's organs, you know, it was a Jew. We'd have never stopped hearing about it every day of our life. And that's what they do. They always use these small examples. And like to talk about the four Israeli hostages, not the 4,000 new prisoners, 5,000, 6,000 new prisoners they've taken, kidnapped from their homes. Those people, the ones kidnapped, those people, are the ones tortured. But because of the control the media, the Jews have, it's never even discussed. Instead of talking about hostages of all time, there's 120 left or so, maybe a little less left. And a lot of those have been killed because of the incessant bombing. Instead of talking about these 120 hostages, they should talk about why there was 120 hostages, because the Palestinians were trying to barter them to get their own women and children and men out of these torture chambers of Israel. So they don't talk about the even since the war started. So Palestinians took whatever 250-300 hostages, right, or prisoners, all right. Israel took 5,000
at least.
I'm talking about since October 7th, at least, yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's 10,000 now. But this is never mentioned because we have a controlled media that makes the subjects, and it even causes people on our side that sometimes defend the Palestinians. They just, you know, they don't think about talking about these things because the narrative, they just talk about whatever narrative the Jews talk about. It's just like we're always talking about the Holocaust, and you got all these people who are talking about, you know, how all of these Jews suffered the Holocaust and all this kind of stuff. Why don't they talk about the Holocaust, that this Holocaust that the Jews have perpetrated in Gaza is not much different. In fact, it's not even as bad as the Holocaust they perpetrated, which was bigger than the alleged Jewish Holocaust in Germany. Because just in Ukraine alone, where I went to school, just in Ukraine alone, 7 million to 11 million died. They had a United Nations study. I can give you the citation and when it was. It's 2003, United Nations study, the top historians of the world. They had an international conference. 24 nations signed on, including the United States and our history departments. And they said the death toll was between, in that particular report, between 7 and 10 million. I think it was actually 12 million from my research in Ukraine. But still, 7 to 11, that's more than the Holocaust. Yet there's only 18 citations in our Jewish New York Times of the Paper of America, and there's 80,000 references to the Jewish Holocaust. So the Jewish Holocaust in Ukraine was far worse. And by the way, it was truly an infanticide, because the people that died was from starvation, and they had big families in Ukraine, average 7 or 8 children. And in a famine, and when you don't feed people first to die are the children, because they're growing. They have a high metabolism, obviously. And also, even the ones that don't die. So everyone that was malnutritioned that didn't die but survived, right, they're going to have growth problems, and they're going to have development problems. They're going to be with them for the rest of their lives. They're going to have conditions that's going to affect them the rest of their lives.
So Dave, she didn't get a chance to ask her question.
Please do, ma'am. I'm sorry.
She was leading up to it.
I'm sorry to go over that so much stuff, but I just wanted to punctuate what you were saying so well.
Well, let's see what she had. Okay, go ahead.
Well, what I'm noticing is I'm seeing a pattern that's leading into the United, because now they've gotten video now, photographs and testimony that there's American soldiers on the ground killing Palestinian children. The next would be probably some type of ICC warrants towards the United States, possibly. And they're going to group the United States and Israel together.
Well, they're not going to try them, though, because
they're not going to try them. The rest of the world, it's going to be, because if you look at the last UN meeting, Israel was speaking and 100-something countries got up and left. You can see what's happening. Being that they're going towards this one world agenda, they need to deal with the Muslims and the Jews fighting each other. They also need to deal with the Amalek story. Amalek has to be included in this war. This is how Amalek actually gets designated into it. Now we have been identified, okay? Mm-hmm. So it's just going to lead, my opinion is that this is very detrimental, because it's going to make whoever out there who is already on the side of stopping Israel. Now they're going to start looking at America and the American soldiers. And, you know, we've got American young men over there doing things that are against international laws. So in your opinion, could this escalate? And then one other thing is the Indonesian government just said that their military is ready to go to Gaza and stop Israel. And I don't know if that means anything and what your thoughts might be on something, you know, like that coming from another military. They hold the largest Muslim population in the world.
Yeah, that opens up a whole wider aspect here. Okay, so let's just talk about America first. Whether or not there are Americans in Gaza, all right, that remains to be seen. We want to see all the evidence of it. But we do know America's supplying the bombs, supplying the intelligence, supplying all the backup to Israel. So they are definitely complicit. They are guilty. You know, if you provide the gun and you know they're going to use the gun to go kill somebody, you're a co-conspirator. You know, you're going to be charged with a murder the same as the guy that pulled the trigger. And this does make America guilty. And it makes Americans sitting ducks, you know, because we travel the world. We do business around the world. We take vacations around the world, obviously. We do trade around the world, all sorts of things, sporting events, whatever. And this is going to put a bullseye on the back of every American. And we've suffered a lot. I mean, the reason we had 9/11 was because those people over there wanted to fight back. I don't agree with what happened, obviously. The letter of Osama bin Laden that was printed on TikTok was amazing. And by the way, it wasn't about anything the Chinese were doing. It wasn't about Chinese influencing youth on TikTok. It wasn't about that. It was all about Israel. It's all been admitted now. It was all about the fact that the Jews were bent out of shape because TikTok, the Chinese people and the other people that worked with them, they didn't mind people exposing the genocide going on, the horrors going on by the Jews against the Palestinian children. They wanted those things exposed. And a lot of the things on TikTok, actually, with the Chinese permitted and everything, was the Israeli soldiers showing their atrocities. I mean, they convicted themselves of all these things. So those are two important points. Now, the point you made about the court, there's such lack. It's amazing they got any indictments at all, okay? But the truth is they indicted two people in Israel. They indicted Netanyahu, supposedly get a warrant for his arrest, and they also made a warrant for the arrest of Gallant, I think, the guy who is the Secretary of Defense of Israel. They could have charged 200, 300, 400, 500, 600 Jews in Israel with genocide, with war crimes. Easy. And by the way, the same prosecutor for years sat on their hands and didn't prosecute earlier crimes. And this is what, again, people don't understand. I talk about this all the time with Dave. Before October 7, just in the last few years, 4 or 5 years, about 5,000 Palestinians were killed by Jews, right? And these aren't Israelis. They're Jews in the Jewish state of Israel. We should make that clear. You notice how the only time they use the word Jews, and they love to use the word Jews when they talk about Jewish victims. They love to use the word Jews when they talk about, you know, Nobel Prize winners or, you know, the brilliant Albert Einstein or something like that, or some Jew in a positive light, a Jewish singer or something. But whenever these atrocities go on, they don't ever say this is Jewish genocide against the Palestinians. They don't say Jews were guilty. Oh, no. Because Israelis don't have the same impact as saying Jews. They only use the word Jew when it comes to praising the Jews, never showing the predators that Jews can be, and they are. Now, I'm not saying the Jews are always predators, but it's just amazing. You know, I've talked a lot about in this show, and it's one more chance to use this, and these are the kind of things we really got to bring out to people all the time, right? And there was a fantastic article in Ynet News. And Ynet News is the biggest publication in Israel. It's an article by Sever Ploker. And in that article, I would just give you one quote, and I know we have little time, so we're going to just do this, but I'm going to show you some of the things. Listen, so he talks about Stalin's executioners, and then it goes on. We must remember, this is the subtitle. The subtitle goes, Stalin's executioners. Quote, we must remember that some of the greatest are the worst mass murderers of all time, of recent times, were Jews. And this is one of the things it says in there. Listen to this now. And us, the Jews, an Israeli student finishes high school without ever hearing the name Gendrik Kogoda. Quote, the greatest Jewish murderer of the 20th century, the GPU deputy commander and the founder and commander of the NKVD, Kogoda, diligently implemented Stalin's collectivization orders and responsible for the deaths of at least 10 million people. His Jewish deputies established and managed the Gulag system, which my good friend and intellectual comrade, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, was in and experienced and suffered and almost died a number of times in those places. 10 million people he killed. But there's no movies. I would dare say that there's not one out of 1,000 people who will hear this show, especially the bigger the audience, the less you're going to hear it. Those who have listened to me a lot might know, might have read my books, but they won't even know how this guy looked. They won't even know that this guy, because he's instantly recognizable, because, interestingly enough, back in those times in the 30s, a lot of people had a similar mustache to Gendrik Kogoda and a similar mustache to Hitler. He's got a little skinny mustache under his nose like Hitler had. And so he's very recognizable. But there's no picture of anybody with that kind of a mustache killing 10 million people. And the article goes on to say that they talk about the nature of the entire Jewish control over the secret police and everything of Russia, which was then called Soviet Union because they hated the name Russia. And they talked about that, and then they mentioned that 20 million had been victims. And you know something else? Even though I appreciate the guy, and by the way, he talked about the leaders of the gulags, I pulled up out of my computer page 79 of Alexander Solzhenitsyn's great book called Gulag Archipelago 2, where he pictures, and this is a great history book as well as being a book of truth about Jewish mass murder of our people. And it shows the six top Soviet gulag operators, the biggest criminal murderous system that the world has literally ever seen, right? So I have a picture from the page. I'm going to do that in one of my posts I make soon. And it shows you the six top leaders. So one of the leaders was Lagar. It says Kogan, but it's actually Kaganovich. That was his full name. Gendrik Kogoda, which was the guy that was head of this, and like he said, that did it. Maturi Berman, Yakov Rapoport, Aaron Soltz, and Naftali Frankel. All of them Jews. Every single one of the top administrators. And the headquarters of this, the guy that was headed from 1930 to 1935, Lazar Kaganovich, was the deputy, right, secretary of the Communist Party, which what Stalin was the secretary of the what they called the directorate of the secretary of the Communist Party. He was the deputy. He was second in command to, and he was a guy in charge of the Holodomor, which killed just in Ukraine, I think, 12 million. But they, major historians say somewhere between 7 and 10 million by the United Nations report. And there's no argument about this. But it just shows you that what you get in the movies, what you get in your media, what you get in your newspapers is not truth, and it's not the real world. In the real world, the greatest mass murderers of all time weren't the National Socialists of Germany. It was the Jews of Bolshevism. And in addition to those killings of Christians in Russia and the Bolshevism, they also directly led to the Second World War. And the next question, if I get to it, I'd love to talk about that book, Germany Must Perish Again, to show you the venomous, the murderous intent of our major Jewish media, where they were promoting a book called Germany Must Perish Again. called for the death of 80 million Germans, all of them, murdering all the Germans. And the New York Times thought it was a great plan, great idea. This is the reality of the real murderers and the genociders that we have to face up to.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Always Honest. We'll get you back in.
Thank you so much, ma'am.
Thank you.
Excellent answer, Dave, as always.
It was definitely in-depth, and that's what we need.
Yes, exactly. We've got our good friend from across the pond, Sir Richard.
He's a loyal listener and a loyal questioner.
Yes, of course.
Well, thank you very much, Duke. And cheers, Gahari, for letting me come on. My question really is referring to a debate that happened earlier today between Jared Taylor on the one side and Greg Johnson on the other, which is it too late to save white America? That was my question for you. And you were talking about liberty earlier, Gahari.
I didn't see that. Tell me about the debate a little bit. So.
Sure. I mean, I think the general debate was that America, as it currently is constituted, cannot survive for the next, say, century. You know, like, will it bifurcate? Will it balkanize? Will there be breakaway? Maybe a secession, like it was in the Civil War. Will there be a continuation of the USA, but it wouldn't be a state for white people anymore? I think Jared Taylor made his opening by saying that no, America cannot survive as a white nation. And I think Greg Johnson, they kind of like were in agreement to a certain extent, apart from there was just a general kind of ambience of almost like kind of resignation in a way, in the sense that the states and the institutions just won't, it doesn't matter which way you vote anymore. I think Greg Johnson was saying that by all means, a Trump victory would be good, but it won't save us. You know, the most you'll see is maybe a shoring up of the southern border and maybe deportations if he gets into office. But I mean, that's my question to you, Duke, and I've got others, but I'll let you respond.
I'll start by answering that this way. I'm not so sure that if Trump wins, whether I'm voting for a third party and Biden just brings this country to the brink as he has been doing, I'm not quite sure in the long run how that's going to work out for America. Because here's the situation. The deal killer for me, and when Trump originally ran, of course, when he first ran in 2016, he ran against NATO, and he ran to be a friend with Russia. But because of the pressure they put on him to impeach him and destroy his life, which they're doing right now, and this guy is licking the dirty feet of these people who are whipping him. It's the most pathetic and the most worst piece of cuckery I've ever seen in my life. It's so disgusting. And he keeps telling us how great the Jews are. And Biden doesn't love the Jews enough. Well, Biden loves the Jews. Biden's facilitating this genocide. You know, he's trying not to alienate some of the votes that he needs, the same way the Jews supported originally the Vietnam War, if you remember. But Jews realized they couldn't win the election, right, unless they changed their position. And it's amazing. I mean, we voted for Trump in great part because he said he went to the Jewish Republican Coalition and said, I'm here to speak it to you, but of course you're not going to give me any, you know, you don't want me to win, and you're not going to give me any money because you want to control the people you donate money to. He said a lot of things like that, which was read by many Jews as being anti-Semitic. At the same time, he just got on his hands and knees to the state of Israel and praise of Jews. Well, one of his Jewish, you know, his apostles, you might say, Cohen, betrayed him. And Wieselberg betrayed him. All these Jews betray him. And it's like, it's just disgusting to see what's going on. So here's the way I view everything through this prism. We may win some short victories. Some things may be a little better if Trump gets in. Some things may be a little worse. But nothing is worse than the Jewish supremacy that rules over us. And I have to keep making this point, and I hope I make this point to all my European listeners. I know you know this, and I know there's a lot of people in Europe who are learning this. But save your energy. Don't get real angry at the Muslims. Muslims are not the ones that opened your gates. Muslims aren't the ones that told your sons and daughters to cut off their reproductive organs. Muslims aren't the people who supported the massive abortions and easy access to abortions that stopped the birth rate of the European people, which is overwhelming European peoples in that nation, while Israel was restrictionist, right? Muslims weren't the one that opened the gates. You really can't blame people if they're in their life, they've been bombed and all that by America and by Britain and everything. Their life's been made impossible, and they have an opportunity for a better life and better food and a better situation in Britain or Germany or Spain. That doesn't mean we should accept. It doesn't mean we should open our gates to them. But, it's like who we got to save our opposition for is the people that open the gates. Is the people that are brainwashing us to say that, immigration's a good thing for us. And every time Trump says something positive about how wonderful Jews are, we got to support Jews all the way, that also makes white people the enemy of all those other groups who are already voters in our countries, who are already there, and whether you like it or not, they're going to be voting in a few elections. And an election is going to have to be part of it. There's going to be some people elected probably today. In fact, it's Sunday in Europe, almost over in Europe. But they're voting, I think, in most of the bigger countries of Europe. And there's going to be more anti-immigration people passed. And we need more to come into office. So elections will be part of it. But the truth is, right, we can't do anything about the ones that are here right now. But if we ever get to power and we get the Jews out, we have a chance of making it possible for those Palestinians to be free and they can return home. And those other people in Europe, like Syria, have come, that they can also help them build Syria. Because a lot of those would love to be in the country of their ancestors if the country was allowed to exist without being flooded by ISIS people from these Jewish controllers of the United States of America. Right. And the thing is that even white people, I don't care whether somebody's left wing or right wing, conservative, liberal, whatever. All I know is that people have a sense of right and wrong. And they see the wrong of what's going on in terms of Israel murdering these Palestinian children by the tens of thousands. And women and everybody else, killing, destroying homes, torturing these people. Anybody can see that. Anybody that's in our movement that sides with Israel is making white people, as well as everybody else in the world, hate white people. And they'll say, you see there, you're in league with these Jews. No, we're not in league with the Jews. Not real white activists are in league with the Jews, because it's the Jews who are destroying Europe. Just as they ethnically cleansed the Palestinian people from they first ethnically cleansed our media, right, and our government in your country and my country of anybody that dared to stand up for the British people or the American people or the French people or the German people or the European people or anybody. The reason we're in this situation is because of that. And we got to realize that. And what we should be doing is using the Palestinian Jewish evil that's going on there to wake up more people about the nature of who the right wing traditionally, and not just National Socialists and fascists, but just all conservatives, understood the danger of the Jewish power structure in Europe and how they represented everything that was against our people and our heritage. And they were going to destroy us for that chance. And they are destroying us. They're ethnically cleansing my country. This is the thing we've got to do. And we got to show that this is consistent. And when we start, siding with the Jews, we're losing any sort of sympathy. I think I've talked to many Muslims around the world. I've spoken to universities around the world. I've never had a Muslim give me one bit of problem when he said, look, I'm a Christian. I'm a European. I want to preserve my heritage just like you want to preserve yours. And I say that Zionism is a threat to all of us, right? It's not only a threat to you in Libya. For instance, that was the last speech I made like that. It's also a threat to us in Great Britain. It's a threat to us in America, Canada, and the rest of the world. We all.
All right, Dave. We got to get
moving. The world have to.
Thank you very much, Dave.
This is the chance we have to get people mobilized against the power structure, the elite of the world that's driving this world and our people and Europe to total destruction.
Thanks, Dave. Richard. Yes. Richard, you wanted to say something about the Liberty before we get to the next caller?
No, you can just I'll wait until after. There's people lining up to try and get in, so I'll defer to the after show, I guess.
Okay.
Cheers. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Richard. We'll get you great back talking in. To you.
Okay, so folks, if you don't have a question or a comment and you're just listening through the studio, I'm going to ask you to leave, especially if your devices are not connected, like deceived by them, because the studio is full and new callers are trying to get in. So if you asked a question, please leave and then come back in, you know, in 10, 15, 20 minutes or so. Okay? Thanks. All right. Jimmy, go ahead, buddy. You got the floor.
Hey, okay. How you doing, Dave and Dr. Duke? Fine, hey, Jim. I got a quick one. I'll just go over and then I'll go listen on the side there. But you know, I've been noticing a lot of the left that's been going on, you know, like they're all the Jew left money seems to be going Trump's way now. And all these leftists that are kosher certified get asked on. I mean, I was just visiting a friend today. He had Fox News on, and I was noticing some leftists on there that I'd never seen before, but whatever. But it's just like you can tell that they're doing a lot to control the MAGA movement and go to the right and kind of you know, block people like us out.
I wish it were true, but you know what you're saying makes me think of?
Yeah.
And this is important, Jimmy. If the Jewish elite is, in fact, flipping for Trump, that's probably the biggest reason in the world to vote against Trump.
Yep.
And I think the reason why they may be doing that is because they know that they're getting undone by all this horror. They're being seen as what they are: genocide, murderers, racist, supremacists. They're everything we've been talking about. I am famous for the phrase Jewish supremacism. I did some research in the last couple of days, and I looked in Haaretz newspaper, which is the oldest daily in Israel, and I found 797 uses of the word Jewish supremacism. This is, of course, a term that I titled a book, Jewish Supremacism. And it's now being used by B'Tselem, the leading Jewish human rights group. It's been used by Genocide Watch. It's been used by Amnesty International, all these groups. And it's becoming one of the most common uses in the world. And Jews are flipping out. They're saying, you know, invented this term is David Duke. You know, this is anti-Semitism. And it is, and here's why that they want to do Trump, because they're hoping there's two things they can do. They know that people are trying to go to Trump because they think that Trump will stop the immigration and Trump will do other certain things for their interests. But what Jews want is they know that they're going to be marching on toward infertility for our people, for birth control, for all those things that are destroying us, immigration, all those things. They're going to be marching on, whether Trump's in there for a few years or not. But what they can't stand is people waking up to the real issue of Judaism. The real issue is Jewish supremacism. That's the key. I mean, it's amazing, the headlines. I mean, I could even quote from a few of you. I don't think we got time. I could actually spend an hour giving the quotes of headlines from Haaretz and other Jewish newspapers talking about Jewish supremacism and the Jewish racist state of Israel. And once people realize about Jewish supremacism in Israel, if we just keep saying it, this is what you got to say to your friends. those Christian, if you have any Christian Zionist friends, I know it's hard to be a friend with a Christian Zionist because it's so damn stupid. But, you know, but if you are a friend with a Christian Zionist, you have an obligation to just pull out your New Testament and quote Christ's words on the Jews and how Jews are the greatest enemies of Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ talked against them and basically said that they were the sons of the devil and the rest of it. I mean, that's exactly what he did say. The Jews are right about how the New Testament's anti-Semitic. And the truth is, anybody now who doesn't want to continue to see the slaughter, the mass murder of Palestinian little boys and girls, and the rape of them in the Israeli prisons, and all the stuff that's going on, these insane wars and destruction of all the Ukrainian young Christians as well, in this crazy war that was totally unnecessary, just like the Second World War was unnecessary. Just like the First World War was necessary. And by the way, I got one small note for you. Just to, I always add to my repertoire. I've known this before for years, but I was reminded the other night in a website or a video I watched the other night that not only did the Jews want the First World War in terms of their role in the First World War because of the fact that they knew that the Germans were lined up against the Russians. The Germans were very militarized and they had, you know, lots of weapons and a lot of industry and so forth. And they knew the Germans would probably beat the Russian, Tsar, the Christian Russia. Germany was Christian too, of course, but they knew that that was going to happen. And that would just defame the Tsar and make way for the Bolshevik Revolution. Then later, the Balfour Declaration was when after Germany and Russia signed the peace treaty. So that was already done. The Tsar was already humiliated and the Tsar was basically on the way out. And then they got the Balfour Declaration from the British. But another factor was, listen to this, one of the reasons why they wanted the war was because the Ottoman Empire was controlling that area, which is Palestine. And the Zionists had already decided that's what they wanted. They call it because it's the center of the world. They wanted the most important center, the crossroads between three continents, Europe, America, and Asia. And they actually, the Rothschilds had huge amounts of money. And they offered to cancel the debts. This is all true. Of the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire, of the head of the Ottoman Empire. They offered to cancel the debts of the whole empire if they would let Jews settle in mass numbers in Palestine. This is before the British, you know, relinquished it and before the First World War ended up taking these lands away from Turkey. This is all fact. And Jews were providing intelligence for Great Britain because they were working on the Balfour Declaration. So another reason why they wanted the First World War was they thought because Turkey was going to line up, right, with the German side. And they knew that...
Dave, we got to take a top of the hour break.
Okay, they knew the Jews were...
All right, okay.
So that's why that happened.
Jimmy,
folks,
thank you,
one
buddy.
One more good example of Jewish warmongering.
We'll get you back in. Thank you, Dave.
I'll see you tomorrow.
All right. Okay, let me take the top of the hour break. Yep, this is Dave Gahary. You're listening to the Dave and Duke Call-In Show on SpeakFreeRadio.com. Thank you, Richard. It's 8 o'clock exactly Eastern Time, 7 o'clock Central Time, and we're getting back to the show, and here we go. All right, hold on, Dave.
One of the biggest bloodlettings of Christian mankind, European mankind. It wasn't Jews that died in that war. Very, very few. They weren't right. Anywhere near their percentage of the population.
Just like in 9/11, they got the Jew call.
Well, they got the Jew call. You know who admitted that, right? Is the
yeah, Franken.
That's right. In his
all
own
right,
book.
Dave. Let's bring in our next caller.
He got the call.
He got the call. We've got Gahary number one. All right. What's your first name, and where are you calling from?
Richard Bronson from Delaware.
Hey, Richard.
Hey.
What's up with that screen name there?
Well, I'm just a big fan. You're one of the originals. You're an OG, so to speak. So
thanks,
I really appreciate your work for a long time. You know, Dr. Duke's nailing them on international Jewry and all of the money that they steal. I wanted to ask Dr. Duke about all of that money that you stole from your donor base. How much did that go to your chin replacement?
Hey, buddy.
Go to hell. Drop them.
Go ahead. Go, Dave, go, answer
I'll deal
answer.
With this right now. Let me deal
answer.
With this right now.
Okay.
Yeah, deal with it.
You know, you know what? I know who you are. You're not for Mr. Yahari. You just said that to set it up.
Oh, he's way better than
just
you.
Just shut
pal.
Up and get off the air. Put him off, Dave. I'm not going to listen to this crap.
You want me to cut him off?
Yes. This
he's
is our show.
Baby.
I'm not going to listen right. to somebody telling lies on this show about me.
All right.
I'll
he's
answer
gone.
His question, though.
Go ahead. All right.
I'll answer his question. The fact is, all right, they charged me with tax thing. And then they were saying, well, David Duke defrauded his contributors.
Supporters.
Yeah, right. supporters, right? All right. And he actually had an income of 40-something thousand rather than what he reported as an income of 17,000. But he was going to casino. I've been to a casino a couple times in my life by my supporters when I was in the legislature and stuff. I'm not denying that. But the actual audit of my account, the actual audit by the U.S. government, right, when they sent me to the gulag, right, the American gulag, the actual audit showed that I overpaid my taxes by $6,000, which showed that not only was my estimate of $17,000, one of the poorest people in politics ever, right, to get elected to office, right, and I was elected to office, ran for Senate. There's no other politician that had lower income as I did, right? One of the poorest politicians ever. I overpaid my taxes by $6,000. My joke was in the prison when I got the letter from the audit. I said, you know, I should be in prison. Anybody who would overpay his taxes to this evil government by $6,000 should be in prison. So what that shows is all those lies were just lies. Because, okay, I got a taxable income of $17,000. Oh, yeah. So let me tell you, any money I spent doing anything, you know, all the money I got from my books and other issues that I did and my other incomes, all right, I put into the cause. That was a fact. I put into the cause. In fact, I didn't even, you know, I didn't even have it in my money. It was to the cause because that's what I did. And this is the way Jews operate. They can't argue with your ideas. And this guy obviously is a Jew. He's obviously an agent. And I'm glad that he called because it shows you how vile they are. Nobody could argue with a single thing I said in this show. Everything I said in this show is true. I'm defending our people. And I went to prison for one reason, because I was the most important person in the whole world, traveling the world, exposing Jewish supremacism, exposing the Jewish wars. I have Newsweek magazine.
And you're right? still banned on X, right, Dave?
I'm still banned on, everybody else is back on.
So why are they letting you on X?
Well, because I'm the most vocal on the Jews.
Exactly. Let me just say something about the caller's comment. So I've had the
pleasure.
You see how
tricky they are? Number one, Dave Gahari. That was just the Jewish trick, right?
I've had the pleasure of.
They'll shout wage war, right?
Of hanging out with Dave in his home. I've been in his car. I've talked to him for many hours. We've done this show for almost 2 years. I know someone who is literally a skinflint. And he's a skinflint. And I like skinflints because I'm like that. He's parsimonious. He absolutely doesn't have. No, you live. You live like a regular American, like I do. You know that. You've been here too.
I don't even think I got a couch in my living room.
No, he's researching 7 days a week. He doesn't go on vacation. So if he had a lot of money from supporters, then he's definitely not using it. So I just want to say, I think that, you know, that's an errant assumption that he's taking money from supporters. I know he's not. So yeah,
that's
anyway, I just
obvious.
Wanted to say that.
Anybody that knows me well, and all my people here, by the way, they knew me in Louisiana. I'll give an example. I got elected. I served in 1989 to 1994. And during that time, right, I was running against six people to get elected. I got elected. I was outspent by every one of the six. I was outspent 100-1 in media. I unseated the sitting governor, right? And the people that knew me the white people of the state and the people of my district and all that. They elected me, and they knew me my whole life. They knew the kind of person I was, and they knew my record, and they knew what I was, that I was going to say and do the same things that I preached to the public. And that's why they did it. Now, in St. Tammany, I even came up to North Shore, which is across the lake from New Orleans. And in 1996, I ran for the Republican Executive Committee, which is a seat that's unelected. The whole parish votes. And this was the biggest, or close to the biggest Republican parish. It became the biggest Republican parish when I became the chairman, right? And everybody wanted to join my party, who were old line conservative Democrats, because I was in it and the leader of it in St. Tammany Parish. And I ran for office. I won election as an at-large delegate to the Republican Executive Committee. Other people were in small districts. A couple of people were at large. When I got there, there were 15 elected Republicans. This is the ballot box. This is like during the presidential elections. So it's not something like a few cronies betting in the back room. This are, you know, balloting in the back room. This was the vote in the ballot box in the normal election. I got elected to the House, what's called the Republican Executive Committee of my parish. There were 15 others elected at the same time that I was. All 13 others than me, or 14 others than myself, all voted for me unanimously to be their chairman. And these were people that I was living there for many years. They know me. They know how I live. They know my friends. They knew my family. They knew everything about me. And they trusted me, and they supported me, and I got elected. And there you go. And then after that, I went to Europe and worked with Souls and Neitzin and finished my doctorate and all the rest of it. So I've never stopped.
Yeah, well, you know what? No, but you know what? Everybody can, you know, assume or have an opinion about that. They might even have a personal experience. But I, like I said, I don't think it's accurate. And if I wouldn't have known you the way that I do, I wouldn't have known about this, but I do. And you're a dedicated man who really, you're upset. You're actually obsessed with this, and you're a scientist, and these type of people don't commit
the time I get up,
scams.
The time I go to bed every day of my life.
I know.
This is on my mind. It's on my consciousness. I think about articles every time I see an interview program on television or a YouTube channel. I think about how they answer the questions and the best way to answer them. And when I find something that I find interesting, then I do research on the subject that was brought up. Like I did research last night on the Ottoman Empire, showing how it's true that Jews, in fact, were spies against the Ottoman Empire for the British, because they wanted the British to win. They wanted the First World War so they could take over Palestine. It's the old, what is it, the Mossad motto, which is, by deception, you'll shall wage war. Everything Jews do, it's by deception. Just like this guy.
Absolutely.
Oh, Dave Gahari, number one. All he was doing was trying to get on the program so could he attack me. You know, he didn't get on there and say, man, I've never heard somebody, and a lot of people say this to me all the time, nobody explains the Jewish question better. Nobody converts people. I want to get my parents to listen to you, my sister to listen to you, my brother to listen to you, my kids to listen to you. They say, wow, this guy makes a lot of sense.
Right. I can't tell you how many comments I've gotten from folks, either email or on the phone or letters, where they've said, I can't believe I was snookered by the media all these years, the way they painted the guy. He's just a soft-spoken, nice guy. And I said, that's why I wanted to do the show, to show people what you're like.
Well, one thing I'm really happy about right now, of course, I've been a Christian all my life, and it's really interesting to see that I did two videos, by the way, you can get them both on Odyssey. About should Christians support Israel is one of them. And also, as the Billy Graham interview, we talked about the Jewish control of the media, and it's going to destroy America. And I'm really pleased that my arguments are getting so through to many, many so-called Christian Zionists who are beginning to change their opinions now. Because they're beginning, because when I say to them, I say, my God, read the New Testament. Read the New Testament. It's all about going against see, the Jews never got the blessings of Jesus Christ, never got the full covenant, the teachings of God, basically sent a son, in my opinion, to get the record straight, right? That the Jews were no longer the chosen ones. The chosen ones now were the people who accepted Christ and who believed in Christ. That's the whole message of the New Testament. And the Jews hated Christ for that. And they still hate Christ.
Right.
But these Christian Zionists who say somehow we should worship the Christ, who hate Jesus Christ himself. Judaism is the most vicious and vile anti-Christian work. And they're against every Gentile.
Anti-human.
Anti-human. That's exactly right.
Yep.
It's anti-human. They look at 99.8% of the humanity. I mean, it's almost 99% is a lot. 99.8%.
Almost all. Right. Almost all.
And they say that all of us, like in the Leitman article I've quoted right in this show, but Baruch Leitman, right, one of the biggest Jewish publications in the world, the Times of Israel. And the whole thing is called the New Holocaust. And it says that all the Gentiles of the world are born anti-Semitic. They're born Nazis. And we Jews, if we don't take charge and take control over the Gentiles, if we don't rule over them, they're going to kill us all. So the only way
they're right, Dave.
I hope I don't want to see any more mass murder of anybody. But
no, I'm just saying they're right because they know
because people are really
exactly.
There's a lot of pent-up anger by a lot of people. I would tell people, you know, we're not going to do mass murder. We're not going to be like them. And I think that's one of the worst things.
All right, Dave, we got to get to the next call.
We shouldn't be like that. But the point is that it's really, really important that people understand the deep hatred they have for all of us. That's for our children.
Absolutely, 100%. All right, let's get.
If we don't understand that, we don't understand anything.
We don't exactly. That's why you have to sometimes repeat the same facts because there's going to be new callers, and even if there are no new callers, those facts need to be repeated, like the quote from that article from Ynet about the world's mass murderers has to be done because it has to sink in. I know that from the Liberty. I did a huge 6-hour broadcast. I did a 3-4 hour broadcast over the weekend. I did smaller broadcasts, and it's tough. We're all like that. It's tough to, you know, let this information sink in. Let's bring in Russ. Russ, go ahead, buddy. You got the floor.
About 15 or 20 minutes ago, you guys were talking about 9/11, and you said something like, they got the Jew call. I didn't understand what you guys meant.
Let's talk about that. Let me give you an explanation for that. Somebody sent it to you. I guess they sent it to you the same time, Dave. So the Jewish comedian served in the Senate. He did a book. And in the book, he said he got the Jew call. He said right before 9/11, it was like a Jewish holiday. And they said, and it was from Mayor Koch's office. That was another Jew, a very radical Jew, by the way. He's also one of my biggest political opponents early on. That's why it makes sense for this guy to oppose me. I don't think he's one of us that made that call. Obviously, Jews hate me. So if Jews hate me, why in the world would somebody who tries to put me down not understand they're doing the Jews' work for them? But anyway, where was I? So he's talking, and he says he got the Jew call because it was alleged that Jews got calls at the Trade Center, and they were warned that they had not to go to work today. And he said, I got the call to not go to work. And I didn't go to work, right? And he said he got the call, which is kind of interesting. This is a famous guy in a famous book, and he admits it. And we've shown that. And in the first couple of days, I did a whole bunch of studies on this thing right after 9/11. I kept my ear to the ground because I knew the Jews had a lot to do with this stuff. And from the very beginning. And I looked at it, and the New York Times at first alleged that, in fact, a lot of the publications were saying, I think the New York Post or whatever ran it, 4,000 Jews were missing, allegedly. Like one of the Jewish newspapers in Israel said, 4,000 Jews are missing. Well, apparently they couldn't get in touch with their relatives in America. Maybe it was because the phones were down. Who knows after the thing. But anyway, they said 4,000 Jews were missing because a lot of the people said that there's a lot of Jews that go to the Trade Center, that go visit the Trade Center. Now, it'd be hard to contact all visiting Jews you know, if they wanted, if the Jews were behind this, or they knew this was going to happen. But the point is that they certainly could contact or try to contact Jews in the center. So we know, according to, and none less than the Washington Post, it's called the Newsbite section of the Washington Post. They did a whole section talking about how the FBI revealed that a number of the Israeli firms, and I'm sure other ones did too, but Israeli firms in the trade centers got warning calls a couple hours before they met. They waited till the end because they obviously didn't want to tip anybody off and they didn't want things to get out. But they actually did warning calls, and it's admitted that that was done, and that was written in news bites. And I remember when Netanyahu was questioned about the attacks right after they occurred. And do you remember his response, Dave? I think you probably do.
I sure do.
Yeah, and so they said, "Well, what do you think about these attacks, Prime Minister?" You know, and what did he say?
He said, "Oh, it's very good." And then he caught himself, and he said, "Oh, it's not good, but it's good for Israel."
Of course.
In other words, you're going to see what we go through, Goyim.
They wanted it. They wanted it not because they're going to. They wanted it because they knew that this was going to empower them to go against Saddam, to go against, you know, to beef up the whole situation and give Israel everything they wanted, and yet there were Jews riddled all through this thing, as you know, and there's lots of evidence that, you know, I can't, you know, I do believe there were some hijackers as part of it. You know, there's lots of different opinions about those things. I do believe there were some hijackers, maybe even some Al-Qaeda people. But I also know Al-Qaeda was infiltrated itself by a Jew by the name of Gaeta, whose uncle was an ADL official, right? And he converted to Islam, supposedly, and he immigrated. And, of course, and we know that Osama bin Laden became a big enemy of the Jews, obviously. And this is what Jews do. They get Jews to convert. They get Jews to study the Arabic language. And then they can try to point them in the directions of what they want to do. And it was interesting because he was, like, very close to Osama bin Laden at the time when they adopted this policy or this program, who got the idea, probably from Gaydan, I don't know. But to get the idea, we don't know what happened to Gaydan. They say he might have died in some bombing in the mountains there, but he may be doing fine in Israel right now. He did his job. And I think probably he was the one that had the whole idea and or that gave him the idea from Jewish plotters and planners, because they thought nothing could more get people's support and against the Arabs and so forth than to do this. And don't forget another thing, by the way, actually, that Osama bin Laden himself was supported by the Jews who ran our government against the Russians. And this is another part of that complicated history that we're talking about here, because what happened was is that the Russians were considered an enemy of the Jews because by the 1970s, 80s, the Jews were absolutely being taken out of power inside the Communist Party. And that's why they gave us the Vietnam War, because they didn't want any strength for Russia, because they knew the Russians were overthrowing the Jews within the party and that eventually the Communist Party would fall. They were already gearing up for Russia as the enemy. And that's exactly what happened. So
Dave, we got to get moving.
Okay.
Russ, we'll get you back in, buddy.
Thanks, Russ.
Before we go, I just want to read this, and this is what Dave was talking about. This is from Al Franken's book, Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them. He said, in his book, he admits to having been warned not to go to work at the World Trade Center on 9/11. And here's what he said before we get to the next call. To tell you the truth, and this is in his book, so anybody can get it and read it. I got the Jew call. I had an office in the World Trade Center, where I used to do most of my writing. The call came from former New York Mayor Ed Koch, or Koch, whatever you want to say. Al, he told me, don't go to work on the 23rd day of Elul. and that's some sort of Jew day. You know, they have to have their own days.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's it. That's what Dave was talking about, and that's it. So it actually happened. Some people say, oh, he's a comedian, he's joking, but we know. Hey, thanks, Russ. We'll get you back in, buddy.
Hey, Ollie.
All right. Okay. Let's get deceived by them. What's your first name? Where are you calling from?
Oh, Don. Yeah, Southern California. Yeah, that guy that that goat herder guy that became head of Al-Qaeda. Yeah, he was just a few miles from here. But, yeah, they took over the valley here after 9/11, the P-TECH guys that, you know, put the blips on the radars and did the whole Hollywood, you know, demolition, whatever. But, yeah, but they run these spray houses. That's what's curious. And, you know, they move money, you know, by the pallet load and toxin by the pallet load and set up spray houses and buy these houses contiguous so they make walls of poison.
You know, what's your question or comment for Dr. Duke?
Yeah, well, I'm 2 months older than you. That's all I got.
That's it?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you, Don. Right, well, appreciate it. We'll get you back in. All right. Okay.
Listen, you quoted from our Jewish friend there from his book. Let me give you one more quote from the YNET News article to kind of give people some understanding about, you know, what's going on. So I quoted from you already about Gingrich Yugota, where he says, Yugota diligently implemented these orders and responsible for the deaths of these 10 million people as Jewish deputies established and managed the Gulag system. All right. Then it goes on, and I read you the names of the Gulag, I think, commanders a minute ago. And this is another thing it says. It says, quote, Lenin and his successors could not have carried out their deaths without wide-scale cooperation, discipline of terror officials and cruel and interrogators, snitches, executioners, guards, judges, perverts. Boy, talking about perverts. Many bleeding hearts whose members were the progressive left and were deceived by the Soviet regime of horror and provided it with kosher certification. Boy, that's an admission. Now listen to this. He goes on to say, this is an amazing one. He says that, quote, all right. He talks about Lazar Kaganovich, included members of the Central Committee, Paul Bureau, Lazar Kaganovich. He doesn't even mention about the Ukraine. I mean, that's not even mentioned. It's even that's right. Bigger than the Holocaust by itself.
Right. Exactly.
They call him, in fact, the Lazar, the first Stalinist. And then also he says in another startling quote here that he says at least 20 million were killed by this, this regime. And then he talks about it, how Jewish it was. Now listen to this. He quotes a Jewish professor named Halfen, and he talks about the evil of this, right? So in 1934, this is the article from Wynet, according to published statistics of the time out of the Soviet Union, 38.5% of those holding the most senior posts in Soviet security apparatus. Now, the security apparatus is at the top of the chain, right? Were of Jewish origin. Almost 40% in a country where Jews are maybe 1%, 2% of the population. Imagine that in Russia, Jews. And in terms of the leadership, was much higher. They, too, of course, were gradually eliminated in some of the purges because they killed their own. In a fascinating lecture at Tel Aviv University, Dr. Halfen described the waves of Soviet terror as a carnival of mass murder, a fantasy of purges, an Essenism of evil. Turns out, he says, this is poker in the YNET News, that Jews too, when they become captivated by a messianic ideology, can become great murderers among the greatest known in modern
Jews too, right? History, even right? Jews, even the beautiful Jews.
Yeah, but Jews
Dave, we got to get to the next call. We're filled up. Okay, thanks. Okay, Bernard, where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Bernard. I'm calling from Carolinas.
Okay,
all right, Carolinas. So that's pretty good. Okay, so it could be North Carolina or South Carolina, right?
Yep. Yeah, I was. Okay. I used to be David Duke's campaign manager, and I just wanted to ask
you. Oh, in South Carolina.
Yeah, I was your campaign manager, Bernard Davids.
Well, I know you, Bernard, but also What about our good friend there? I'm trying to think of his name. I know his name as well as my own. Dr. Carter.
Oh, yeah, Dr. Carter. I just want to ask you, Duke, how much coke did you buy when I was your campaign manager and snort off of that hooker's ass on that?
You're back. Another one of these. Yeah.
Yeah, coke, right? Coke. Wait a second. I want to hear about that hooker's ass.
That's an argument, aren't you? Listen, just cut it off, Dave. These people say this crap. Just cut it off, Dave.
All right, okay. All right. This is kind of funny, though, you know, these people coming in saying that.
This is what Jews do. This is what the German National Socialists talked about. This is what everybody's ever fought.
Yes.
This is how Jews.
Yes, of course.
They just leveled the most horrible things they can say.
That's because you're over the target, buddy.
Yeah, that's exactly because they know we're effective. That's
exactly. Why. Especially you.
Cocaine.
And that's why you are banned. I know. So that's why you're still banned.
Buddy. Show me the evidence, you bastard.
There you go. That's what I was going to say about the other caller. You know, I would have asked, can you provide the evidence? And, of course,
not
there is
what
no
the
evidence.
Government says, but how about
that's too bad. I'd like to see that coke on the hooker's ass.
But that's the thing. As we talked about earlier, they control the brain because they control Wikipedia. They admit that.
Right.
And the biggest contributor to Wikipedia is Google. These three Jews, actually.
Jugal.
Jugal. Yeah, and Schmidt.
Dave, let's get to the next call.
And more than that,
really popular.
Let me put in the letter from the government after they finished the audit, admitting that I didn't underpay my taxes. I didn't have any tax fraud. I underpaid. And if that was true, then obviously I certainly wasn't robbing my people if I had a taxable income of $17,000.
Well, look, really, if you were robbing anyone, we would hear about it from somebody other than the SPLC.
Not a single person ever said if they ever contributed to me during any of those times. Not a single person ever, and the government admitted this, by the way, never said I want my money back. In fact, I felt whatever I supported David Duke with, it was the best. Or even it's usually small money because almost our community is small. The best money I ever spent because nobody ever stood up for us the way.
Dave, you're over the target, buddy. That's what it is.
I know.
But all right. It's cool that we get these calls. I kind of like them.
No, it's not.
They're invigorating.
Cut them off because they.
Well, I don't know when I don't know who they are.
Yeah, but as soon as they open their mouth with that shit,
right?
Just
stop them. All right. Okay, we got your cousin Vinny.
Yeah, I knew
from Indiana.
He lied about the situation, and I don't know what name he was using or whatever, and I didn't quite remember that. But he didn't know the name. He didn't mention Dr. Carter. Or, you know, Dr. Carter. He didn't know about Dr. Carter was our campaign officer and our campaign leader. So that's
it's a good thing you got a good memory, buddy. Go ahead, Vinny.
That's the fact. Right. Go ahead.
Hello, David and Dave.
Anybody can check that out. Dr. Carter was my campaign manager, not whatever name this guy.
Bernard Davids. Go ahead, buddy. Go ahead, Vinny.
Bernie Davids was actually a Scottish guy, and he's just copying a name of a person that was a good supporter of mine. He's dead now, unfortunately, and he came and visited some friends of mine just 3 or 4 years ago before he died. And he was a good supporter of mine for years and years and years, and that was Bernie Davids. So they just copied a name.
Yeah. I got to, Bernie, I have to remove you because people are coming in.
Yeah.
So I'm going to, you could listen
on
this.
Bernie was a Scottish guy, by the way.
Oh, he's gone. He took off himself.
Yeah,
okay,
Bernie
go ahead,
Davids
Vinny.
Was, I'm talking about.
Was, right. Scottish guy.
In fact, he was originally with Rockwell back in the 1960s. And by the way, his name is also a Scottish name. That means a Jew, because you got a last name Davids might be, some people might suspect it. But he wasn't Jewish.
David, this guy put Davids with an S at the end.
Yeah, Bernie Davids. Yeah. He's a Jew, but Bernie did too. Bernie
Davids was
a Scottish guy.
Right.
A good guy. He was with the movement for 40, 50 years, and he was very dedicated.
Yes,
and
thank
he had
you.
A disease, and he committed suicide, unfortunately.
That sucks. Go ahead, Vinny.
Hi, David. Hi, Dave. There's a clip from Thomas Massie talking to Tucker Carlson. The whole thing's on Twitter or X.
Yeah,
but The quote is, this little segment says, Mike Johnson, a deep state pawn, ? And in it, there's a clip that David's probably going to want to take out of it and use on his show, just like he uses that clip of Chuck Schumer saying that his name is Schumer, Guardian of Israel, and his purpose in the Senate is to do Israel's bidding. But Thomas Massie says that when there's any vote that comes up on foreign policy, people say, I can't make a decision how I'm going to vote. I have to talk to my APAC handler first.
No, he said APAC guy.
APAC guy. Yeah. APAC. Yeah.
So, you know, guy. Cynthia McKinney, she revealed that decades ago.
Yeah. It's a
Massie also said in an interview, and I've seen a couple of them, got some pretty good stuff on Redacted. And by the way, there's a really great article on Redacted just from, I think it's from last Friday's show. But it is absolutely amazing talking about APAC bribing the Congress and the evil that they did. It was really, really good. But by the way, I just wanted to mention the fact Massie also said, and which was extremely powerful, he said that they went to a retreat of the Republican congressman. In fact, all the Republican congressmen were there. And the man that was invited by them and by their leadership to come and speak to him was an Israeli minister, a foreign minister. And by the way, we got to keep reminding people, because again, nothing is ever in context. The Israeli state was a terrorist state. First terrorism against the British, then terrorism against, and they blew up the King David Hotel, terrorism against the Palestinians. And over the years, terrorism against America in the Liberty attack. Terrorism in the Levant effect, where they tried to blow up American installations and blame it on the Egyptians and get us into a war with Egypt, which had been an unjust war. And the incredible damager, spy against America, Jonathan Pollard, who actually revealed this was during the communist government, the names of our agents in Europe, which many of them disappeared. They can't even put their names on the wall in Arlington, wherever they have the CIA headquarters again. But it's just like amazing. And Pollard did more damage to America than any other spy in American history, according to our Secretary of Defense. Yeah. So there you go. We got to remember about these things about Israel, right? So they've got
a
representative,
Vinny,
of a country that's trying to destroy us.
Yeah. I kind of want to say something that ties in. In a thread back to what you had just talked about Al Franken saying about the Jew call. When Tom Massie was running his primary like a month ago, the APAC has a fund called the United Democracy Project, and they're working coalition with the Republican Jewish Committee or Council. And the guy who runs the Republican Jewish Council is Norm Coleman. Norm Coleman, back in the 90s, he was the campaign manager for Paul Wellstone. When Paul Wellstone decided that he was not going to support, or he was hesitating, and maybe he supported the Afghan war, but he wasn't going to maybe support the Iraq war, the Adelsons and Karl Rove brought in Norm Coleman, who had been, he'd been Paul Wellstone. Paul Wellstone's birth family name was Winkelstein, and Norm Coleman's family name was Goldman. So there's two Jews who used to be like best buddies. They brought in Norm Coleman to run against Paul Wellstone. Wellstone dies in a plane crash. Then Al Franken, these guys used to all be buddies in Minneapolis. Then Norm Coleman lost to Al Franken for reelection. And it was a super close race. But, Norm Coleman, he's the guy who runs the Republican Jewish Coalition. And he basically says that his job is to make sure that no American First candidate, no Republican candidate who talks about the Jewish lobby can ever be elected. And they got the House and Senate pretty much tied up. So they're pouring all their money now. They got like $100 million. They're putting in state campaigns. So you had 38 states controlled by Republicans who passed anti-Semitism, basically destroying the First Amendment. You can't talk about anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. They're all anti-boycott, divest, sanction legislation. I mean, really they got that much money.
I really appreciate your knowledge and what you've added to this conversation and talking about this. And one of my jobs here is to do what Paul Harvey used to do, if you're old enough to remember Paul Harvey, to tell the rest of the story. So whenever somebody talks about even things like AIPAC, we've got to remember that the narrative about AIPAC is the narrative that they allow in the Jewish media. And here's what you got to know about AIPAC, and all of our people need to know about AIPAC. I want to arm all of you with the truth so you can explain to people how this works. So Jews routinely tell us that, well, AIPAC is not even the biggest lobby in terms of financing in Congress. There's a number of other lobbies that spend more money on individual contributions to candidates. That is technically true, but AIPAC controls 50 times more money and more billionaire contributors, 50 times more than all the other lobbies combined. Because what AIPAC does is, they, since the Citizens United Act, the Supreme Court decision, anybody can give as much money as they want. So if here's what the situation is. If you take all of the money given by all the special interest PACs in Congress, add it all together, it's actually less than $1 billion a year, way less, right? You can have one Jewish guy like Bloomberg, who's worth $25-26 billion. If he gives $1 billion in a campaign cycle, and that's going to affect his standard of living, actually, with $24 billion. It's unbelievable money, isn't it? So that one guy can contribute more money to candidates than all the other PACs combined, probably times two or three. I mean, that's exactly what the deal is. And so what the thing is, so AIPAC is much stronger than even appears on paper. Now, they spent about $400,000 against Massey, but they probably spent a lot more than that. Massey probably didn't even mention it, just individual contributors who did special interest, you know, ads and so forth, which they can do in campaigns now.
They spent $6 million against John Hostetler.
Well, exactly. So, but and that wasn't, you know, probably $6 million from AIPAC only.
But that was AIPAC and the RJC.
Yep. So yeah. So it's really, really important to whenever anybody brings up AIPAC on a show, if you call in and you're asking questions and so forth, just point out that AIPAC has a list of the biggest Jewish billionaires, and they know that AIPAC studies all the candidates. They know which candidates they feel are good friends of Israel, those that are against it, who will support the Jewish supremacy rule over us, the ones that won't, the ones that are on the program of America First, are the ones that are on the program of America Last, Israel First, the ones who are on the program of Open Our Borders and are not. And so they have that list. And they can call up any Jew, any Jewish billionaire, and they can get more money than practically any other PAC in Washington. More money for a particular candidate or for a whole bunch of candidates or for a presidential candidate. The three
But they're the not biggest contributors always one last successful,
sentence.
Right?
One last sentence. With three biggest billionaire contributors to Donald Trump were three Jews. Sheldon Adelson, his wife, and Mr. Marcus.
Home Depot.
And that was an insurance policy.
They lost in California. They spent almost $5 million attacking Democrat Dave Minn, California's 47th district, and he still won. And listen to this, Dave.
Yeah.
Israel wasn't the main topic of the campaign, and ads deployed against Minn mainly highlighted his arrest for drunk driving. Despite this, he pulled off a victory. So these Jews will use anything in their bag of tricks, right?
Of course it is. And you know something else? I'll just tell you about something. You know, it's just like Trump. I mean, Trump has got a pretty sketchy past, obviously. And he's not the moral icon that, you know, that people would expect a leader to have for our people. But at the same time, you got to realize what really counts in the end. And I'm disappointed by Trump by what he said and what he's done in some ways. He's done some good things and bad things. And I did support him because I didn't want Biden and I didn't want Clinton. But at the same time, this support for Israel is just, it's to the point where I find it hard to morally pull the lever for Donald Trump. But the point I was going to engender here The truth is, the way Democrats vote and the way everybody else votes is, if someone's got some moral failing, and every, a lot of people do, like Christ said, everybody's a sinner, that if someone has a moral failing or something makes some mistake, like a drunk driving conviction, that's pretty easy to do, especially these times with the lower levels. I have never had one. I'm saying it's easy for people to have problems. Then, you know what? The important thing when you elect somebody to office is how the sucker's going to vote. And I probably would have voted. I don't know about all of his other positions, but I probably voted for that guy who they were against, nor the other candidate, because he was the enemy of AIPAC and the Jewish leaders. So we have to really, we do have to make a principled vote, but at the same time, we've also got to make a pragmatic vote. I find it hard to even make a pragmatic vote when I got a guy that I'm saying, let's vote for him for president and be president, who's telling us, oh, support these Jews who are destroying us, the sort of Jewish establishment who loves them. And he says that the Democrats are enemies of the Jews. Biden is not an enemy of the Jews, obviously. Biden identifies himself as a Zionist. In fact, he even made a quote, famous quote about that. He said, I'm a Zionist. And he talks about how when he was young, he said there was something so wonderful about Jews. They were so strong. They were so powerful. They were so connected, you know, all this stuff. And he's a Zionist. He said, you don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist. I mean, it's almost, in my book, almost worse than a Jew. But to say that, you know, no, it's not true that Biden's against Jews. And Biden is basically running a tricky thing. And I've got to say, I got to admire some of the leftists, because a lot of leftists right now are saying, even though they like Biden, some of his other positions, which positions I don't like, for instance, mayor and immigration and other issues, they say, even though he's got these positions, they can't vote for Biden because they can't vote for somebody who's going to be supporting a genocide. And I can't vote for any president that supports our enemies committing genocides, you know, against people that don't need to be our enemies. The enemies of our people are not the Palestinians, not even the Muslims. The only reason there's Muslims in Europe to a great degree is because of the Jewish immigration policy. And I don't have hatred in my heart toward Muslims. I have a lot of anger toward the Jews who have taught us to hate ourselves and taught our children to hate ourselves, and have perverted people and divided families even by subverting them and subverting their children to the Jewish cause.
Thank you, Dave. Thanks, Vinny. We'll get you back in, buddy,
for the
lightning round. Okay. Let's bring in Johnny Sunshine from Wilmington, Delaware. What you got, Johnny?
Hey, fellas, how you doing? I just wondering, did you guys ever see the link from that Irish politician, Thomas Gould, the speech he delivered?
I sure did. I played it the other day on my show. Yeah, I played it on the Jeff Rentz show last week, by the way.
Oh, wow. He said he wished Bibi Netanyahu would burn in hell. Could you imagine an American politician coming out on our Senate floor saying anything like that?
I hope when Netanyahu comes that they have the Capitol completely surrounded, right?
Yep.
So
I hope so. I sent Dave that clip. I don't know if you could play it. It's only 2 minutes and 16 seconds.
Yeah, let me get it. Sure. Hold on.
Go ahead and play it. It's hard to understand because it's a very powerful Irish brogue, but go ahead and play it. It's worth listening to. It's very emotional and it's very powerful.
Yeah, he talked about the genocide.
Let me see if I could play it here. All right, let me see if I can.
I think you got to share.
Okay, so I'll do present, share screen. Okay, I don't have two monitors, so that's too bad. Here it is. Share.
Well, you're able to play
the photographs and the pictures and the videos that come from there. And you hear the screams of people screaming as the Israeli government burned men, women, and children alive. They burned them alive. And the world stands by while 15,000 children are being slaughtered, 35,000 men and women and children. And it's unbelievable. the genocide that's happening. A child with no head. A child with no head. And the Israeli government say it's a mistake. A mistake. I hope that Benjamin Netanyahu burns in hell the same way them children and their families burned. I hope him and his generals and the Pharaoh government in Israel, that when their God finally brings him to the resting place, that he deserves to burn in hell. Because what is happening now, not alone is it apartheid, not alone is it atrocity and a war crime, it's just horrific. It's just horrific what they're doing. Where is their soul? Where is the soul of the Israeli people that allows their government to do this to children? Where is their humanity? The Israeli people, the Jewish people, after everything the Jewish people have suffered down over the decades, that they would allow their government to do this to other human beings. Human beings. But in the eyes of Netanyahu and this far right Israeli government, Palestinians are human beings. But today here, the Irish people say, we recognise Palestine. We recognise that they are human beings, just like every one of us. Shame on Israel. Shame on what they've done. And will never be forgotten.
Bye, please.
That was powerful.
Yes. Yes, very. Thomas
Gould. We got more callers, though. We've only got a few minutes.
Yeah, he thinks they're human. That's a problem. Yeah, Johnny, you got a question besides that clip?
Well, you know what? That's right. And Jews don't think of us like humans. In fact, that's one of the things that really struck me as a 14-year-old boy when I first went to the Jewish Encyclopedia, which was 1912, 1916 edition. And a whole section on Gentiles, and they had a subsection on Gentiles titled "Only Jews or Men." Now, back then, that's called a misogynistic, you know, patriarchal word and all that. Men, rather than just people. But the point is, what they're saying by that was only Jews or people, and they actually featured one of the quotes saying the best Gentiles must be killed. And they had a rabbi discussion with it, with other Jewish rabbis. And that's what they do in the town, but a lot of this discussion. And they said, yes, what is meant by that? Well, the best of Gentiles must be killed in exactly the same way that the best of snakes must have their heads crushed. In other words, the best of the Gentiles, the smartest of the Gentiles.
And they did that in Germany.
The most courageous, yeah. Most
people. Yeah. Dave, we have to get to Johnny, because then we got more. Believe it or not, it's almost 10 till. Johnny, go ahead with your question.
No, that's all I got. One other quick thing. I came across some rabbi stating that it's okay for the IDF soldiers to go ahead and rape Palestinians.
Yeah, that's right. That was actually a Jewish rabbi, you know, priest, saying that it's fine for Jewish soldiers to rape. But this is the way they've always looked at it. Just read the Old Testament. You know, read the Talmud.
Thank you, Johnny.
After he made that comment, they made him the number one rabbi.
Yeah, that's nice. Dave, are we going to have a quick after-show show tonight?
Maybe a little short one.
Okay, good. All right, thanks, Johnny. Okay, let's get in.
I think Catherine's going to call. Catherine's going to call.
Is she? Really? Let's get in Richard, because he had a quick question about the USS Liberty. Go ahead, Richard.
Hey, cheers, Gary. Well, dude, my question regarding the Liberty is what was the effect on that regarding the crew? I mean, you mentioned earlier, Gary, about the it's traumatic. Of course it was. I mean, it was a military attack by the Israel Defense Force in order to, I guess, goad the Americans into war. I can't remember which war it was at that time. 1967, was it? But I wanted to hear Dave's question, answer to my question, which is, to what extent survivors of the Liberty, do they identify as Zionists? Do they identify with You know, our movement.
Most of them don't, but we can get that today. But I do want to say one thing about it.
Sure. Okay, go ahead.
You ask what happened to the crew in this case. Well, you had a couple hundred of them, 174 of them wounded terribly. A lot of them were burned horribly. And by the way, you have the captain of the ship, McGonagall, who was extremely heroic. And he braved the enemy fire and the napalm going off and everything else to get an antenna strung so he could call the fleet and let them know who was attacking them. It was very vital that they got information out. But he was very brave. And to show you how evil and how they try to manipulate us all, because the media never brought this out. They never made a big deal of this. And the Navy itself was controlled, again, by the Jews. I told you how they suppressed, and Dave talked about how they suppressed the investigation of the Liberty because too much bad stuff could come out. But when he won, McGonagall won the Medal of Honor, you know, one of the highest awards of the American military establishment. And usually these are always given at the White House. If somebody's alive and living, they bring them into the White House. Sometimes when it's even their family members, they just bring them to the White House. But in this case, because it was the Liberty that was attacking them and murdering them, they didn't want any more publicity or didn't even knowledge of what was going on. They did it at the Navy Yard with hardly any press coverage at all. I mean, it's disgusting. So he should have got really an honor. He won the Congressional Medal of Honor, and they kind of hid it from the American people because it was Israel doing the attacking. This was a horrible attack that wounded 174 Americans or so, maybe more, and killed 34. I think, is that the numbers, Dave? Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. It's 34, 174.
Yeah, that's fine.
Applied to have their benefits, but many more didn't because they didn't want to embarrass themselves for their wounded shipmates. They didn't feel that they should have any awards, and their fathers who were in World War II. But let me answer the question about what Richard said. When I set up the documentary, that Liberty documentary for that organization, True News, and that guy, Rick Wiles,
yeah.
When we got back from Florida, from the filming, one of the Liberty survivors who I selected to be in the film, he sent an email to the crew. And he said, "Shipmates and friends, like it or not, Larry Bowen, Mickey LeMay, and I were interviewed by True News this past week. We were there with Phil Turney and Dave Gahary in support of his book, Erasing the Liberty. The show is airing at 4 p.m. Eastern today. I make no excuses. It's about time that someone helped us get our story told. I hope you watch."
Right.
Bob Scarborough. Well, now, but let me tell you. And Bob has since passed on, sadly. I wrote to him 2 days later. I said, "Hi, Bob, I'm writing just to you. Why did you preface your email with, like it or not?" He wrote back that same day, "Been busy. Sorry I haven't responded sooner. Some of the folks that are in our collective are pro-Israel, which frankly pisses me off. So I wanted to let them know I don't care what they think. The story of our crew is more important than their love for Israel. My desire for our story to be heard overcomes any concern for their anti-American, pro-Israeli feelings they might have. In short, my friend, if they don't like it, they can line up to kiss my ass."
That's cool. You know, I talked to a number of the Liberty advisors over the years, probably I've talked to half a dozen, maybe more. And I asked all of them, you know, what do you think among the crew? And they were pretty clear to me. Said, when somebody says something like support for Israel, that's going to stick out to you and it's going to make a big impression on you. But most of them basically told me that there were a couple. In fact, if they said there were a couple that didn't, I said, well, what were the names. Sometimes they couldn't even come up with a name, or they knew that one or two said something. But still, the fact that any Liberty survivors would have this attitude is really shocking. But it shows you how deep the Jewish power is over the mind of people.
Because exactly.
You control, when you control Google and you control Facebook and you control so many of the churches, like Christians and Jews United. Christians and Jews United are run by a Jew. Right?
Exactly. Dave, we're going to have to
cut it.
Yeah, no, actually, there is no next question.
Oh, come on,
so we're going to have a after show show.
Well, I think we got another question. It's five. I got five at 7:56. We got time.
Yeah, what we're going to do is we're going to.
Is Catherine there waiting?
No, Catherine's not here, but we're going to let the listeners know where they could hear you during the week.
All right.
Go ahead, Dave.
They can hear me at the Rents Radio Network, rents.com. You can go in there. You can find the stream. It's easy to do. They also have a telephone number you can call, and you can listen to it free on your cell phone because most people have unlimited calling, and that's an easy way to do it. And you can also find me on Gab at Real David Duke. You can find me on Odyssey with my original videos. There's about 100 of them there, and that's at Real David Duke on Odyssey. And you can find my website at davidduke.com. And by the way, if you do a site search, and by the way, in Google, you can do site colon and the name of my site, davidduke.com. And then you can just put a space, and then you can search for any term you want to. And you will get so much data on any subject that you want to talk about or write up for school or write in some posts. I got so much material in there, and you're going to find a tremendous resource there.
Thanks. And Jimmy put the link in there. Dave, for the listeners who would like to support your work, please tell them where they should send their shekels.
It's box 188, Mandeville, Louisiana, 70470. And if they want to send a contribution, I'll be glad to send them a signed copy of my book. And of course, they can also order signed copies from you of Jewish Supremacism. So.
Thank you, Dave. All right, there's the music. Folks, thanks for listening. And we're going to have a quick after-show show. So come on in. We'll see you next week. And that's about it. Have a great week and talk soon.
Don't forget to tune in next Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, for the Dave and Duke Call-In Show, where David Gahari and the incomparable Dr. David Duke will take your phone calls and discuss whatever questions you want to bring to the table. See you next Sunday.